And now we have Kaiser Trad from the Islamic community on the line. Is there, Kaiser?
Yeah, thank you, good morning.
Look, thank you very much for coming on to Dads on the Air.
My pleasure.
You are the first, you have the honour of being the very first Muslim person we've had on to interview about the many subjects and gender issues that we talk about on this program, so it's great.
It's a very important issue, and more people should be concerned about it. It affects children, their parents, it affects the future of this society that we live in.
Now, there's a huge gap in perception, isn't there, between the way the Western world views Islamic people and vice versa, the way Islamic people view the West.
It depends on which sectors, I suppose, of the Western world and the Muslim community. Those people in the Western world have had a reasonable level of interaction with Muslims, and most Muslims have had a reasonable level of interaction with others in the Western world, tend to have a more balanced view and a more balanced approach. But those who haven't, they tend to base their views on, unfortunately, on perceptions generated through media coverage, and we both know that sometimes media coverage can be inaccurate, depending on who the journalist is.
Won't go too far down that track, mate. Now, is it true that it's true, isn't it, that in the Islamic community, family is very, very strong?
It is. The family is almost a central unit. A great deal of religious teachings are devoted to the family, and the idea that children are the future and that they deserve proper nurturing and proper support is hammered home very strongly in both the Quran and the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. So in that sense, nothing really is left to human experimentation, but rather we've got divine guidance as to the rights of every member of the family, the rights of the children, the rights of the parents. And when we say the rights of the parents, they're not lumped together. There's the rights of the father and the rights of the mother. And also there's guidance in relation to custody and at what age custody transfers from one parent to the other, and sometimes when custody must transfer, even if the age is not reached. So that's a fairly comprehensive set of guidance and teachings. And
can you sort of just explain some of the detail of that? I understand that normally custody of the children goes straight to the father.
Generally, if the children, it depends on the age of the children, if there's a separation or a divorce and the children, you've got to look at the sex of the children. If it's a girl, the girl goes to the father after 9 years of age. If it's a boy, after 7 years of age. Now, that does not stop visiting rights. Of course, both parties have visiting rights throughout the life of the child, and the child has a duty to honour and respect his parents regardless of whether they're separated and regardless of who he or she is living with. But if the mother wants to remarry, then it doesn't matter what age the child is, the custody would automatically transfer to the father, and that is for two reasons. One of them is to make sure that the mother has the freedom to go into the relationship without having to ask her new husband to care for somebody else's child. And the second reason is it's a protection for the child, because we've seen many instances, and I've been living in Australia for over 30 years, and we've seen many instances where stepfathers have been far less than understanding with stepchildren. There are cases where they've been good, but there are many cases, unfortunately, where they've been far less than understanding, far less than supportive, and in some cases where they've been downright abusive.
Oh yes, the statistics would strongly support that view that most of the problems come from stepfathers. And it seems to me almost biologically wired, you know, say, just for instance, in other species, in the tiger, for instance, if something happens to the male tiger and a new male tiger moves in, that tiger will automatically kill all the cubs in the, you know, that have been fathered by another male tiger. And somehow it seems wired into us a bit like that too.
Well, unfortunately, unfortunately, human society does tend to mirror some of the practices of the animal kingdom. Now, that's not to say that they would go to the same level, but some human beings have gone to that level. Some human beings have severely hurt or even killed their stepchildren. I've listened to some horror stories from Father Chris Riley from Youth Off the Streets, and he tells some horrific stories of what some stepfathers have done to their stepchildren. Some of the stories that I've heard from him are so haunting that I just can't get them out of my mind. Like the story of this three-year-old boy who was abused from the age of three by his stepfather. And his mother, he would say, would just sit there looking and doing nothing, because at the time everybody there was either drunk or drugged out of their minds, and the poor child just has no protection in that environment whatsoever. And where's the natural father? Well, the natural father doesn't have the same access, the same right to custody, and unfortunately the child suffers the most.
Kaiser, obviously Muslim Australians must sometimes face a dilemma if they want to follow Islamic tradition, like you've just described with regards to the family and children, but yet they're operating under modern Australian laws, which obviously tell a very different picture, and with the family court and child support agency and all that sort of thing. What do modern Australian Islamic families do if they want to follow tradition, but yet they have to obey with Australian law?
Well, one of the good things about Australian law is that it doesn't kick in unless one of the parents goes to it and insists that the matter is brought before the court. If it doesn't, there are situations where we've reached agreements between the parties involved that custody would go in accordance with the divine guidance, and all parties to that sign up to it. Now, that's not enforceable. Any of the parties can change their mind and decide to go to the court, and if they do, basically the agreement that we have reached with them becomes null and void. Interestingly, those agreements are not only done in relation to custody, but also in relation to property settlement in the case of separation. We tell the people right up front, if you believe in God, well, this is the system that applies to you, and if you decide to go against this system, then you are naturally in breach of the teachings of your religion, and that's something that you'll have to answer for to God eventually. And people understand that. Now, there are some who decide to opt out of this system. There are some people who say, well, we get more out of the family court, so we're going there. And we say to them, it's your choice. This is a free country. However, to be a practicing Muslim, the right thing to do is to abide by the divine instructions.
And do you find on the ground that actually works, that, you know, when the children, when they reach 7 or 9, go over to the father, but that both parents still have, you know, but the mother still can visit those children? In practice, does that all work okay?
Oh, yes, it's worked fine. Throughout the Muslim world, that's how it works. It's only in the West where there are cases where people opt out of that system, but there are cases where they haven't opted out, cases where they have embraced it and accepted it. You get some hiccups in the system where the wife feels that the father's not contributing enough to the maintenance of the child, and she decides to become recalcitrant against the divine system and wants to become possessive, and possessive of the children against really the wishes of God. And in that case, there's nothing we can do apart from give advice, and advice to the mother to just rethink her strategy, and advice to the father to be patient and persevere and pray to God that things will go back to normal. So we do have problems in a Western setting, but in countries that do respect religious observance and religious rules to marriage, we find that they actually apply these laws. And if you look at a country like Lebanon, for example, Muslim relationships are governed by Muslim law, even though the country is totally secular. It's a secular democracy. but it is governed by, but marriage and divorce and inheritance are all governed by the religious law of the particular individual. So if the person is a Christian, they operate under their own Christian laws. If they're a Jew, they operate under their own Jewish law. If they're Muslim, they have their own Islamic courts to deal with Muslim settlement, custody and inheritance issues.
We're talking of Kaiser Trad. He's been a spokesman for the sections of the Islamic community for many years. We'll be back in a moment. And we're talking of Kaiser Trad. He's been a spokesman in the Islamic community in Sydney for many years. Kaiser, what, I've just noted some stories recently about domestic violence in the Islamic community, and of course there's a lot of public hysteria over domestic violence with, you know, paid ads and all this sort of stuff. What is actually going on?
Well, look, the religion of Islam is very clear on this. We abhor any form of violence in the house or outside the house. However, having said that, we do respect that sometimes the children need to be disciplined, and that discipline may be in the form of a slap on the wrist, but never to the extent where any injuries are caused to the children. In fact, it's an absolute last resort, and it is something that is very strongly discouraged in the religion, but it is not totally prohibited. That sometimes children do require physical discipline, but most Muslim families do not resort to that level. They find other means of disciplining their children, means other than the use of the slap on the wrist, but more a system of rewards and other forms of punishment. When it comes to husband and wife relationships, the Prophet Muhammad is very, very clear on this, that he had criticized those people who used physical violence against their wives, and criticized them in very, very strong terms. However, there is a verse in the Quran that sets down the rules for situations where the wife seems to be on the brink of having an extramarital affair. Mm-hmm. And if you go through these rules one by one, you find that at the very end, if nothing else works, then there is a sanction for the husband to use physical force to prevent an extramarital affair. Now, the Prophet has again discouraged the use of that physical force, but that provision is in the religious teachings to stop extramarital relationships. And if the wife, on the other hand, was to see that her husband was on the brink of having an affair, she has other means to stop him, and she's basically given the right from the word go to bring in other parties to stop the husband from committing adultery. So these rules that apply to adultery are rules that are not the norm for relationships. As far as the normal relationship goes, there is a complete prohibition on any form of violence by the husband against his wife. It's just something that the religion does not stand for and will not allow at all.
And fidelity is very important in Islam, isn't it? And I heard you talk before about the importance of being a virgin before marriage, which of course is not a fashionable view in the broader community.
It's important for both the man and the woman. It's not just for the woman. It's just an indication of a person's ability to control themselves and to show respect for their partner, whether it's a male or a female. It in fact shows a great deal of respect for a partner if you preserve yourself for the person that you finally intend to marry. If you love that person enough to have a physical relationship, well, why not love them enough to be married and to have a permanent relationship? Now, unfortunately, the breakdown of relationships in modern society has led to greater promiscuity because people feel uncertain or unsafe about relationships, so they tend to try their luck with the physical side before making the commitment. And we say, well, if it's good enough to get physically intimate, then it should be good enough for you to make a commitment to each other.
it's such a complete and total contrast to the general mainstream culture in Australia, which is fairly laissez-faire about all of these sorts of things, and most people, you know, in the broader community, tend to sort of try it on before they tie the knot, sort of thing. How does it all fit together in the modern Australian world?
The individual, if you have enough faith in the teachings of your religion, then you will try and exercise control as much as possible. And in Islam, marriage is really easy to get into. It's not as complicated as the modern society has made it out to be. Now, some Muslims have created complications in their relationships, in that they will have an engagement party and another and a playing off a knot party and then a wedding party and a party for so many different things that it ends up being a very, very costly proposition. But it doesn't have to be like that. Marriage just requires very simple, basic elements, which are the presence of witnesses, or that the marriage is broadcast to the world so everybody knows that you have intention to be committed to each other. The payment of a dowry by the male, by the groom, to the woman as a gift to her. And consent, and
away you go.
And also the agreement of the guardian, the father or the guardian. Now, once you've got these elements, the marriage can be just a very, very small party, and people get together, and hopefully will be happy ever after. And there's another issue about it, is that marriage under Islamic teachings is practical as well. It's not just that you must fall in love first. You can actually, if you find the person sufficiently attractive and close to you in personality, and then you can get married, and then love develops later based on how much commitment you show each other, how much support you show each other. So you start off with a small amount of love, and that grows throughout the relationship until it becomes an overwhelming degree of love, rather than wait for, you know, to be swept off your feet completely.
Yes, which is a sort of romantic myth in the West. Look, we'll just close on a final question, Closer. Well, the family seems to be so important to the Islamic community. It's far more important often than in the Western culture. Do you think that's one of the reasons why the Muslim community is so cohesive and so strong in Australia?
Well, it certainly does add to the strength of the community and to the cohesion of the community, and it's something that we would love to see spread across the world, that everybody, regardless of their religion, puts a bit more emphasis on the value of their own families, and that the whole idea of family becomes more important. Because, you know, when the family breaks down, then you have a generation of young people that becomes more hostile and feeling less loved, so they love others less than the little love that they've received. So the world becomes a sadder place. We want the world to be a happier place, where people grow up in an atmosphere of love, and they perpetuate that love throughout the world.
That's a good note to end on. Look, thank you so much for coming on to Dad's on the Air.
My pleasure.
That was Kaiser Trad. He's been a leading spokesman for sections of the Islamic community here in Sydney for many years. So thank you so much.